Please listen carefully.
Welcome to the Rick and Dodd Show. Two dudes, a podcast, and some laughs.
Prepare to be underwhelmed.
And away we go.
My mom told me about the, she had called me earlier to let me know about the whole test thing that I heard about on the radio, because I'm 47 and still listen to the car radio. And the morning DJs were talking about that. Have we ever talked about how much I just hate morning fucking DJs?
Well, I mean, that's also your problem. Like, you're listening to morning drive time radio in RTP, or in, you know, in the Raleigh Durham area. I'm hoping it wasn't G105. But the, I mean, just even there, it was the fact that, I mean, they had so much turnover between stations. Certain stations, like, they'd have a new morning show like every 6 months, like clockwork. That just ends up being a problem of just morning radio in general in a, you know, in a I guess small to mid-sized market.
Yeah, they so I listened to the this is probably super riveting, but I listened to the alternative station that they have, and they have a show that they've partnered with through iHeartRadio.
Is that 95.3 or like that?
Yeah, so they've got a show that they've got there that, like, broadcasts, like, all across everywhere, and they keep adding markets, but it just sucks. Like, I mean, it's better. It's a lot better than the other morning show. So, like, the other morning show is now on G105. That used to be on 95.3 in the morning.
Okay.
And they would do this thing where they would, like, for football season or golf season, they would just, like, loosely cut broadcast clips of, like, things that could be possibly taken, like, as a sexual innuendo. Innuendo. And I'm having such flashbacks to it that I'm stroking out over here.
You're clutching your pearls.
Yeah. So, and that bit would last for like 15 minutes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like 15 minutes of Joe Buck being clipped. Like, oh, he's in the, yeah, well, he took that one in the backfield. Like, who, come on. Like 15 minutes that it was my entire morning drive to work. And I almost cried tears of joy when I started, working at my current employment, and they were like, this radio show was, our morning show is moving. And it was like radio silence for in the morning for like 4 months. And I was like, oh my God.
Yes.
And then they got the new one, and I was like, not happy about it. And I was like, all right. And then I heard it, and I was like, all right, it's not great, but it's better than the other one.
Better than what was there?
But, oh, it's, that one is, I think they call it the Woody Show.
Okay, I've heard of that for something else, so I don't remember where, but I do remember that one.
Yeah, I'm like not super into it, but it's there in the morning, and like my thing is that I wish. So they try to stay completely apolitical, but like it totally comes from a place where they don't understand anything, you know, or they're in their own la la land. And it's funny is because it's like you'll listen to it, and it's it, like, I think it does a really good job of getting you set to go into work in the morning, because you literally just watching these people basically suck up to their boss for however long you're listening to the show.
So like, it gets your head on straight.
Yeah. They're just like, oh yeah, boss. You know, it's like, and it's funny is they're all afraid to like basically say something or like disagree with them, and you can just sense it through the radio. And it's like, you know, it's like, ah, oh, just start, you know. And it's funny because since I basically work by myself, I don't get any of that. So You know,
that's when you just start doing improv, just like in there, and you know, set up boxes and make a box and have it be a box boss, and then you're sitting across the room yelling at it, and then you have box employees that you're yelling at, and then you just you make it fun as opposed to just staring at the wall all day and you know, hoping that the sandbags don't fall in.
Well, I would do that. I'll do that. I'll probably end up start doing that once they block the internet.
Yeah, there you go.
right now I have full access to a ton of stuff. It's just like I can't watch certain videos on YouTube, which makes it really hard when you're like trying to fix something and like the instructional video that you need is blocked, probably because the dude says a swear word in it. So But my mom had on the radio this morning they covered it, and it's the same reason my mom had called me earlier to notify me of the presidential alert. And I don't know about you, but my Facebook feed has a ton of people, or social media feed. That way, I don't date myself. fucking that's so stupid. People like throwing a real big fit about that. Like, I don't know. Like, it's like, we don't get upset when the National Weather Service tells us we're in like a severe flood watch. Like, I would like to know if I'm going to get bombed to death by a missile.
Yeah. I mean, that's where it ends up being like, something where it's not really anything new. It just ended up being a case where, now they're like turning it around and, slapping the presidential name on it and just kind of streamlining that, as opposed to it already being an extension of the, you know, the national, alert system. So it's anything that is, ridiculous. It's just something that he can now claim and, slap his name on, and just, I know it's going to end so well. And there's, you know, nothing bad is going to come of this. But also at the moment, I don't give a shit enough to complain about it all in like social media. It just ends up being more the case where it's not actually doing anything, but they're just talking about it and kind of, using it as an ego boost.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any issues with it, but I mean, I don't know, maybe that's how they're going to test when they start sending the Gestapo after us. Be like some Logan Run bullshit where you're, instead of your fucking gem glowing in your fucking hand, it's the your smartphone's going off in your pockets, all right, it's Gestapo to your location in your little cubicle. Free thinking over here, but I don't know. But
it was funny because I was on a work call today, and then it's like I was dialed in through a WebEx, so online, and my phone was next to me, so the alert started going off. But you could tell who else on the call was dialed into the call through their phone, because then like either they stopped talking or they ended up like noise you could hear going off. So then it was just kind of like everybody running to the phone to grab theirs to then just silence the alert.
Yes. Yes, it was great. So we got cell phones in. So I think I'm a drug dealer now, because now at the office I'm the only one that works at my site. I have two desk phones and my personal cell phone, and then they just sent us a cell phone. So now I have four phones every time I go to work. And I'm like, why do I need so many phones? I understand my personal phone and the work phone, the two desk phones. I'm like, really need a cell phone? It just stays at the office. And they have it locked in kiosk mode. So like you can't even somebody texted the number asking about like donations for a charity thing. And I can't even delete the text message. So it's like just going to stay there forever. And my big thing is now I just basically go and I I don't know if we've talked about this on here before, but I was able to find a local shop that carries a Universal Fighting System. So
you had mentioned it a couple of episodes back that you had found it that and you were going to start going there. But at the time, last we talked about it, you hadn't actually started going there yet.
Yeah. So basically what had happened was I bought two or three boxes of product at the time. And the guy that was supposed to be building the community got canned. So, and of course I didn't, you know, find this out until after box five or six that I bought, cause I was getting really good deals on them. And I was just because they're basically just blowing it out because they don't want to support the game because they felt like the dude that was in charge of the non-Magic TCGs ordered too much of all the stuff. So, I'm just going to go. Basically, they have this thing called a Premier Store where you sign up through their website, they send you a free product, and you just keep it displayed. So, and basically, anytime you sell out of a box, you just order another box to replace it. And they send you two boxes at each new set. So, not bad. Like, you know, free product. You don't take any of the risk up front. So I'm just going to try and get the local store that I usually play at. I'm just going to try and get them to carry this stuff and just be like, hey, you don't have to pay for any of it up front. And, you know, I mean, and I think that would be fine. Like, because this other place is like really out of the way. The owner came in. So my favorite thing is you've gone to a few local or LGSs or, you know, magic shops or local game stores, however, you know, you want to call it, where my favorite thing is because they end up being small businesses most of the time is that you get like the not so great owners. So I'm in there Sunday and mind you, I've already at this point that day I bought like two or three boxes because they were basically just throwing them at me. And the owner is literally having like a meltdown because he's just like, there's too much of it. And I'm like, well, are you going to be able to order more if I would like it? And they're like, I mean, if you get people to come here and buy it, then yeah, but you know, another, I'm like, okay. So literally all you're telling me is to buy the rest of what you have and never come back here.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's like, why would I go back there outside of just getting more product and then just going somewhere else? The last time I bought a box that day, and the next day I came back and bought two more boxes and then proceeded to not even open the boxes there, take them to another store, open them there. And I'm like, and then proceeded to buy the rest of this, like sleeves, deck boxes, whatever, at the other store. And I was just like, you know, I'm like, you literally just told me just to buy all your stuff and never come back here.
Yeah, not really a great business model.
Yeah, and I'm like, you should be like, well, you know, if you ask for it, yeah, and we can work something out for you, as long as you don't, like, the answer should have been, well, yeah, I mean, we don't sell it often, but if, you know, you don't order a lot of it, or if we don't have to order a lot of it, we'd be more than happy to get it in for you, and then if we can get more players in here, we'll usually try and have more on hand for everybody.
Well, it's not even anything to do with, like, LGS. I mean, that's just the common way of doing any local business. I mean, I ran a... I managed a hockey store when I was in high school. So I was essentially pulling 40 hours a week there as well as, you know, attending high school. The same thing where it's like, yeah, like we don't carry everything in stock, but we'll gladly order it for you, as opposed to say, well, no, you have to buy all of it or we're not ordering anything.
Not even buy all of it. They literally just say, basically just to go, what's here is what's here. And if you don't like it, fuck it.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's just so nuts. Like,
the concept of repeat business should not be foreign in that manner.
Yeah. I mean, it's just nuts. So I'm picking up, you know, I am picking up probably going to try and pick up the last of the good product and just stick them with the rest of it. And then come back like 2 months later and be like, you know, and just, you know, I'll pay you $1 a pack for the rest of it. Mm-hmm. Cause there's only like three good sets out right now. at the Cowboy Bebop set, Mortal Kombat, and the Blood Omen set that they've got. And, you know, the singles are super cheap. Like, I was listening to a podcast today. They were talking about the UK Nationals, which people can just go to.
Okay.
They had a grand, you ready for this? An international tournament. Do you want to guess how many people showed up for it?
350.
No. You got the 50 part right.
Okay.
An international tournament, 50 people showed up.
An international tournament.
And I was just sitting there and I was like, well, hell, I.
In London? Or where?
Yes.
In London? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. 50 people. About 50 people showed up. And, you know, usually I guess for those. So their large events are like not big. So it's like, all right, well. You no wonder they have the same people winning over and over again, because you don't have any players. The game's fantastic. But I just thought that was so funny, just sitting there. I'm like, well, for a weekend you could go over there, you got a 1 in 50 chance of getting yourself put on a card.
Yeah, I mean, that's not bad at all.
There goes your custom magic tokens, right? Be like, yeah, like, so I just went over to win this tournament because that would probably be cheaper than trying to get an artist to do quick custom tokens for me. For you, at least the last time I tried to get it done. I just wanted to basically beach sidewalk caricatures on like stock paper, so I could use them as token or you know, like acetoned foils.
I mean, that would look pretty sick.
Yeah, just like silly little caricatures that somebody would do of you that you could get done on a boardwalk for, you know, what, $30?
Yeah, if that.
The dude tried to charge me $125 per card. And this isn't like an actual established artist. This is like some dude just fresh out of art school. And like, I get that I get that as an artist, you don't give it away for free, but you know, I was willing to pay an amount of money for that. $500 for a caricature that, you know, I'm not asking for like, you know, something in like you to spend a lot of time on it. We're talking about like 3 minutes, three minutes of work, you know, and it's like, and I'm providing half of the materials on top of it, like 3 minutes of work in a Sharpie, like even the magic artists don't even charge that for their specific pieces.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I was going to say. I mean, thinking of what they end up doing in, what they end up doing for a lot of the custom, well-established artists that are doing things where they end up having, you know, you come back in an hour and they do something, or a little bit later in the day, and they'll end up being around $100 for, you know, in-depth commissions.
Yeah. I mean, realistically, like, and this is what's crazy is that, like, if he was willing to do enough of them, like, because obviously I play Miracles because I don't like playing Magic with other people. And I just wanted some entree tokens. And I thought, like, a chubby, like, angel caricature of me on a card would be really funny to use as a token, right? No, just fat, chubby angel drawing loosely resembles me. Takes you about 3 minutes. You see me. You see what I look like. You put it on the card. You know, this is what's stupid. It's like, I was willing to pay like for a set of, you know, four or five. I was going to give him like $100. But I'm like, you talked yourself out of $100.
Yeah,
like,
out of, you know, a good enough gig.
Yeah, like. You know, that's not bad. And I get it. Like, you know, the amount of work that would have taken 5 minutes. Be like, here's $100. I've got this really cool thing now. Thanks, right? Now it's like $500. Get out of here. Get out of here. So, yeah, that's just, I don't know. I don't get it. I don't get it anymore, man. I don't get it. I'm going to take a hit of this duster I got set aside over here to get back in the mindset so I can maybe understand it. But yeah, that was nuts. But for those of you that will possibly be attending Savannah Video Game Expo next month, you will see a freshly jet-lagged Donald, which is me, for those of you that get confused, especially with our name show, or the name of our show here. I should be doing a panel at that convention about intro video game collecting stuff, so, and just general tips on how to do that and how not to dig yourself into a total hole of debt like some collectors end up doing when they start. So I will be there. A panel is probably going to be 30 minutes to an hour, probably right in the middle of that. And so that'll be fun. That's my first, I'm not like a featured guest, but
is that again?
That's the November 17th and 18th. I'll be there. I'll be there both days. I will be tired as shit, most likely, and we'll have a bag full of Japanese goodies because I will be back. That's actually I come back on the 15th, so that's 2 days before. So that's 2 days before the convention. So I leave on the 5th, come back on the 15th, and then I immediately go to Savannah. I can try to I'll be probably finishing filling out the paperwork for Jet. I've got that, and that'll be fun. So I'll be there. I've got that. I'm working on a couple more videos. I've just got to get my computer. I've got to figure out my computer situation. I need something that I will be able to edit on a little faster.
Mm-hmm.
Cause like right now, to do that, the green screen stuff, I have to make the shot. I have to record the raw footage, upload it, apply it to the background, export it again, and then bring that into a brand new project to be able to even edit it, export it again, and then add all the stuff that's basically all they edited, the bumpers, all that stuff, basically export it all again, you know, bring it back in, and then bring it all back out. Each one of those exports takes like an hour and a half, and I can't touch my computer at all while it happens, or else it might fuck up the export.
Oh, yeah, that sucks.
So, and mostly what happens with the export is that it'll cut out the video completely. So if I need to, like if I'm editing and I decide to open up like a YouTube video to make sure that I did something right, there's like a 60% chance it's going to fuck up the export. And each one of those exports is like an hour and a half.
Yeah,
and that's just for, you know, we're talking just for... Yeah, just for a 10-minute video. So our buddy, one of our mutual friends, was trying to convince me to spend $2,000 on an editing machine. Also, so I can play games with them as well. But mostly to play games with them was pretty much what they were trying to get at. But I don't think I need to do that. I don't think I need a...
You're not going to get much more satisfaction out of going the PC gaming route than everything you already have in your massive collection. So that would just be another time and unnecessary money sink there. As far as the editing route, you can do a good job with something that's, you know, less than a $2,000 high end rig. Doing something that isn't going to lock up when you're trying to just do an export, it would be a good investment for just your sanity as well.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, I'm not, like, as I said, like, I'm not opposed to getting it. You know, if we were talking, like, you know, around, like, a desktop that was around, like, you know, $600 or $700, like, and all I'm using it, like, you know, if all I'm going to use it for is editing, the majority of that cost is going to get caught up, you know. Yeah, obviously, I got to dump the RAM into it or whatever, but, you know, the majority of that cost is going to get caught up in the graphics card.
Yep.
And, you know, I don't know. All I know is that the graphics cards are expensive now. And, you know, I mean, realistically, the budget version of this, that said desktop, was like, I think it was like $1,500. And I'm like, we're talking about spending $1,500 to run $200 software. Like, that doesn't make any kind of sense.
I mean, I know it's after, like, most of the, well, it'll be after Japan, so that may actually be good. But then also, I mean, just look for some Black Friday stuff, because you can get pretty decent. I mean, you'll be able to get, you know, the most bang for your buck for upgrading what you have into something that is usable. I mean, obviously, it's not going to be, you know, a Mac Pro that has the top end shaders and all of that crap. But it'll end up getting you something to be able to do what you need to, while also not having you paranoid that if you touch it, you'll lose 3 hours.
Well, yeah. And it's just, I guess today's topic, or today's real topic, is just going to be folks trying to give me bad advice all the time. So obviously I'm thinking about working overseas and in Japan, specifically, which I think it's episode 20 where we talk about in-depth reasons for that and all that. But one of my things is that I'm looking at a few companies, Jet, Aeon, and a couple other ones. And the majority of these applications, the deadlines are in November.
Okay.
Actually, it's right after I get back. And conventional wisdom says you should probably check stuff out before you actually commit to anything. So there's an interview for Aeon in Raleigh next weekend.
Oh, that works.
And well, the issue is that they offer you stuff. They basically will most likely offer you a job by the end of the interview.
Okay.
So I want to be able to make sure that it's something I actually want to do. And the other thing with Aeon is that you can apply anytime. So they have, you know, different interview sites from here, from like 2 months ago to the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not something that immediately has to get done. So I can actually sit there, because I didn't realize the deadline was coming up as quick as it was, because all of the deadlines for all of that stuff outside of that one interview spot for Raleigh, they're all in November or later.
Okay.
All between November and December. So I was like, I got home. I like put the resume together and was starting to write the essay. And I was like, this isn't going to be very good considering I have to turn this in. Like, since I have to submit this like now, mm-hmm. I'm like, this isn't going to be very good. I'm like, why don't I just pay the $150 to go interview in Atlanta in December? Cause that's the next closest one. And like, or, you know, how much it's going to, you know, a hotel room for two nights, you know, outside of Atlanta, you know, and maybe $200. Okay. You know,
is it worth maybe the investment versus worth your time, stuff like that, or worth trying to do something that and cram it in.
Yeah. Like and not only that, but like, if I rush through that, like that's a decent chance, like in a decent chance, but like, you know, if I decide I go over, you know, and I decide that I don't want to work in Japan, or I'm not specifically at a place where I would want to, like I'm locked into a contract. You know, I would be locked into a contract before I would even go over there to see if I liked it. Like, and that doesn't seem like a very smart thing to necessarily do. Like, obviously I'm open to applying and everything, but I want to make sure I want to have as much information that I can glean before I put myself into a situation that may not be beneficial for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and apparently this is also like stuff like that is just like really a foreign concept to people, because like I can see when, like, sometimes when you talk to folks about that kind of stuff, like, you can see either if they may or may not have a stake in it, they like try to get manipulative or like try to influence you to act a certain way. And like that, it's like, and it's becoming more and more apparent as, like, you know, as you know, time goes on, or, you know, it's just like stuff I'm becoming very, very, you know, like, I'm noticing more and more. Like, I don't think I would ever tell somebody to actively do something that's not completely beneficial for them when there's no reason for them to
do it otherwise. Themselves. Yeah.
Yeah, to expose themselves to that risk. Like, that's nuts. Like, why would you, like, that's and especially it wouldn't be something I wouldn't do myself. So, like, if I wouldn't expose myself to that kind of risk, why would I tell somebody else to do it just flippantly? Just to be like, yeah, fuck it, go do it, man. Hey, fuck. Like, no, like, you just gotta, you know, you gotta think about all this. You got to think about everything before you make decision, especially a decision like that too, right? I could go over there next month and I could hate it. You know, I don't think I will, but, you know, but I could go over there and I could get stuck in the first door that I walk through, right? And I could be like, well, this isn't going to work. Like, you know, like, there are things up there, or, you know, it's like, you obviously have to plan for stuff. Like, and the other thing is that the other reason was if they tell you to basically, when you apply, you're most likely going to leave within 4 to 6 months from that application date.
Okay.
So you would realistically be talking about January. And it's like, well, you have to have money saved up to go over there in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to pay for the first ticket. You end up paying for the majority of the plane ticket, and they don't pay you until the end of the next month.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, you basically,
that's quite a delay then.
Yeah. So, like, you know, you have to have money saved up, and, you know, they tell you to bring $3,000 to $5,000 with you, you know? So I was thinking, okay, realistically, I was thinking maybe March or April if somebody offered me something. But the majority of those jobs, they'll end up staffing you in July or August, which is when I was kind of realistically looking at going anyway, because I'd be able to have some money saved. I'd be able to downsize stuff at a reasonable clip. And by that time, I would be able to figure out whether or not when I would be going.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it gives me a chance to kind of get my feet, you know, to kind of get my feet under me and actually prepare for it. I mean, because, you know, basically, if you think about it, like, I don't know if like 3 months is enough to, like, basically, when you're not necessarily prepared for it, to get all your shit together and move halfway across the globe.
I mean, we're supposed to be moving out of here in June, and that's even just freaking me out. We're essentially moving, like, you know, 5 miles north, and all of our stuff won't be out of our sight for more than a day. So, yeah, I can totally see how getting all of your shit together and moving across the country would cause a little bit of consternation.
Yeah, so, like, it's just one of those things where it's like, you know, I'm not the kind of person that's going to respond to the machismo, fucking do it. You know, you got to do it. You're not going to fucking do it. No, if like as I've always said, I'm like, right now, realistically, I've always been like 60-40. Right. I've been 60% in favor, 40%, you know, is undecided. So it's like, OK, well, those percentages can change. There's like a lot of factors that go into that. And it's like, I need to make sure whatever situation I put myself in is obviously still beneficial for me, because it's like, right now, it's like, that's asking me to make a lot of assumptions on the guarantee that I'm going to get employed by one of these people.
Yep.
Which I may not. So, like, you know, what's the point of me sitting here going through selling all my shit for nickels and dimes to get the stuff together to be able to go over there, and I don't get hired? You know, and so, you know, I'm just sitting around here without actual plans put in place, to figure out what's what.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know. That's just not a smart thing to do, and that's not how I do stuff. So it's been very interesting to see those who have ancillary stakes in my decisions, how they basically act and how they basically try to influence decisions that I'd be making in it, you know, with not great advice.
Absolutely.
So it's like, it's super fucking frustrating. So, no, I mean, it's like one of these things where it's like, I don't like, dude, I mean, so I grew up with ADHD. Like, I spent so much of my life not thinking about decisions and just doing stuff and being impulsive, because that's one of the things that now I have to sit down and I have to realize that I can't be impulsive about everything, and I have to actually think about stuff. So, I mean, you know, this is what's crazy. It's that, like, you know, somebody will say, it's like, you know, oh, well, you're backing out, or you're going to change your mind. I'm like, I'm not fucking I haven't changed my mind about anything. I just want to be better prepared. I mean, I fucking booked the trip.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I booked the trip to go over there to see if I want to fucking live there. Like, I want to make sure whatever I do, I'm putting myself in the best position. It's because that's what you do. There's no fire sale on fucking ALT jobs right now. You know, the difference that realistically between me applying fucking now and fucking the start of December is fucking negligible. So, like, and there's still a chance, even if I apply in December, that somebody's going to try and get me over there in April or May or March or April.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, once again, it may not even, and of course, there might be something better. You know, they've only got the interview scaled out to December 8th, but they take applications every month. So when it gets closer, I'd actually be able to see the interview schedule out even further.
But I mean, it's also not like you're making excuses or you're just pushing stuff off. Like, you're doing it. You're doing it with your due diligence. And I mean, there's nothing else there that, you know, somebody can say, like, you're... I grew up with a lot of friends that had the, if I only had X, I could be so much better. I did this, or I would do this, but I'm just not going to, or like, I can't do this because of why. But there's in all of our conversations, both here and elsewhere, like, that hasn't been your mindset in any way, shape, or form for any of this. So, like, the fact that, you know, you're doing it your way, but you're also doing it your due diligence and all that stuff, makes 100% sense. And you're going to do what you want to do, because you're going to set even if it is slower than other people are saying, and like, there's a, you know, the boastful, you know, shit or get off the pot mentality, it's going to be something mm-hmm. where you're doing it at your speed, because that's what, you know, that's what you're going to do, because those are you're not out here like, holding your hat out and asking for handouts for, you know, somebody to take you over there and make it happen. Like, you know what you want to do. You have it planned out. It's just a matter of kind of attacking it your way and making sure that you're setting yourself up to be successful, because, hey, you're the one doing the research. So you're the one that knows, like, how it's going to play out once you get over there.
Yeah. Like, you know, it's one of those things. I mean, for fuck's sakes, it's like, I'm the dude that takes 40 minutes to win a fucking game of Magic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, it's like, yes, you have to be methodical about this stuff, because it's like, when you make decisions, you want to minimize the amount of, like, you always want to minimize the amount of risk that you expose yourself to. And, you know, it's just super frustrating when folks necessarily don't understand that, or try to, you know, just because it's going to be beneficial to somebody else. I mean, yeah, I mean, sure, there are people that, like, it would be beneficial if I had to go over there, you know, in January or February and had to get rid of a $1,500 arcade cabinet for $200.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, I mean, like, yeah, you know, that's beneficial. Or folks that may or may not, you know, be, you know, trying to change, you know, certain life situations or whatever, or, you know, or expecting changes in life situations at some point, you know, that's a thing too. So, like, you know, once again, it's like, it's just so obvious, and I hate it. That's always been like one of my big things, is I hate when people try to like manipulate me to act a specific way. Mm-hmm. It's always been one of my things, because like even when I was younger, like I could always see through the nonsense. So like, you want me to do something, just fucking ask me to do it, and you're gonna get a yes or no.
Yep.
And that's gonna be it. So I don't know. I'm not that kind, you know, I'm not that ugh, but ugh. So yeah, so that's been fun the last couple of days, and I've been, you know, dealing with that nonsense, that I've been dealing with a migraine on top of it. So like, literally just been just angry brain goop. And like, I even found, like, it was so bad, I was even found myself like, because it's to the point where it's like, it starts to affect my mood.
Oh yeah, I know that for sure. Like,
yeah,
trying to plan stuff and overthinking and doing all that stuff, I get hit with that sometimes. So like, when I know that's the case, I know something's kind of gone wildly off course. So trying to course correct myself and take a step back and take a breather and understand what's going on there goes a long way.
Yeah, like I have to, like, for instance, like this month, right? Like I've actually got to put together my itinerary. I've got to find out how to buy the train pass that I need to buy for the week when I'm over there. I'm over there for 9 days, so I need to buy a train pass because I plan on taking the train to the neighboring cities in Osaka, and I'm at spending 2 nights in Tokyo, or 30-40 minutes outside of Tokyo. So like, I have to get that done, and trying to get that done on top of trying to fucking plan for when I come back to go to Savannah. And on top of it, for some of the applications and stuff, you need physician statements, that kind of stuff. Like Jet basically wants to count your teeth before they let you fucking work for them. you know, and so there's like, I have to get like a ton of doctor paperwork. So mind you, I have health insurance. I don't have a doctor that I go to.
Yeah.
So because America. And you know, so I have to get all that done. So it's like, I'm already sitting there, I'm like, okay, well, I'm like, I can probably get away with not having the car inspected for, you know, having the car be late, a month late on the registration. Like, because anytime I go to get that goddamn car inspected, they always find something wrong with it that needs to be fixed.
That's the lovely part of North Carolina DMV.
So, you know, it's just like taking it in to get inspected, where it's like right now, I know I have a taillight issue. Like, I've replaced a couple of the bulbs. I can't figure out, because I don't have anybody competent enough to tells you the state that I'm in. I don't have anybody competent enough to stand behind my car to tell me which taillight is out.
I feel so bad. Like, I want to like hit my head on the desk and like go straight through the microphone to hit the desk. Yeah, that says a lot there.
Yeah. You know, and so it's like, whatever. So I know I'm going to go, and that's going to be another $40 for them to stand behind the thing, because we've got the thing, or, you know, or they're going to try and get me to get the brakes done again. And I probably need to have the brakes done, but it's another $500. If I'm only looking at keeping the car less than a year, regardless, I'm due for a new car. Even if I don't go over, I have to get a new car. I'm going to get a new car. So it's either I go over and I get rid of the car, or I don't go over, end up, you know, finding a house in an old neighborhood for $300 a month and a sad head job to the banker, and, you know, end up having to get a new car anyway. I know mortgages aren't $300 for anyone. That was a bit of hyperbole. So, you know, it's like, I have to think about that stuff too. Like, and, you know, like, I hate so in the past 3 months, I had to put new tires in the car, had to replace the battery, I just had an oil change in the damn thing. I really don't want to put any more money into it.
Yeah.
Oh, and I just had to have the alternator replaced. So I don't want to put any more money into that fucking car.
Which is quite understandable.
So, yeah. So, I mean, for fuck's sake, I could take my fucking $500 and go get a goddamn Dodge Dart for fucking 2016 Dodge or 17 Dodge Dart for $9,000.
Yeah, it's, you know, dirt cheap there.
So, I don't want a Dodge Dart, but they have seat warmers. So, yeah. So, I mean, it's just a whole bunch of, you know, just silliness. And like, you know, between, you know, just folks making, you know, silly decisions or not sitting down and thinking about stuff. And half the time, like when I talk about, like, generally when I basically talk to somebody about something that, you know, I'm like dealing with or whatever, like my decision is already made. I just want to make sure that it's the right decision.
And you know what I mean? And most of the time you're just talking through it with someone. So you're talking to them and bouncing it off. And then so that the other person there, I just actually talked about this to my therapist today, where the other person is there and you're talking to them. But they're basically there just as the catalyst for you to talk about it. And you're really only there like talking and walking through it and figuring that out in your head. And then you're like, oh, okay. And so the other person doesn't even really need to be an active participant. They just have to exist. And then you're, you know, helping yourself out. So yeah, the majority of that, I do that all the time.
Yeah. So, I mean, and I know it's, I don't want to say it's more normal looking to do that instead of pacing in a circle, mumbling to myself and having an in-depth conversation with myself.
I mean, not everybody can have a Scrooge McDuck, you know, pacing room. So, I mean, that usually ends up helping.
Oh, it's me, Goldpit. Is he, I don't remember. I got, it's been so long since I've seen DuckTales.
I don't think he was Scottish. He was just old and crotchety.
Yeah. It's funny is I haven't seen DuckTales in a while, but I've played it within the last 2 years. So, cause I played DuckTales too. I don't know if you remember in that group chat that we had when I was taking pictures of all those dinosaurs that I was coloring on my Nintendo.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. God, I almost want to go fucking play that again. There was the best series. I think that night I played Color of Dinosaur for about 45 minutes and laughed nonstop. And I can't find any of those pictures anymore. I was digging through our group chat because I didn't save them to my phone. But
I mean, man. I think that falls under the realm of living your best life. So I have no, I'm not going to contest that at all.
Yeah. So, you know, so, but yes, so one thing I actually did want to completely change the topic, was I did want to, so, since, Southeast Game Exchange, I've met more game collectors and more collectors, more, you know, I've started to, slowly emerge into the collecting thing. From time to time, I'll catch folks on some smaller folks on stream or whatever, or this or that. And every once in a while, somebody, will reply to a tweet, which is exciting. So, exciting, he said facetiously. Mm-hmm. But it's like, hey, we can actually have a conversation now. So, but in one of the groups that I'm in, after, you know, I've become a very, this group is basically just me, the guy who started the group. It has like 400 collectors or resellers or whatever in it. And it's pretty much just me, like, it's like six or seven people actually talking. So one of these guys posted a picture of some sealed games and he goes, should I go and get these graded? And that's actually something I wanted to maybe, you know, get your take on, because I feel because especially with Magic, that's a huge thing, is getting stuff graded. And I wanted to see what kind of your take was on that, because I know my take on just getting stuff graded in general.
Yeah, it ends up being a case for me. I haven't really found that much use in it. There's a handful of stuff that I've had that has kind of been like, oh, it would be good to get this graded. But then at the same time for me, like I collect for nostalgia. And so for me, there's not much more there that a grading is going to enhance nostalgia in any way. So eventually I can get rid of something, but it's not going to be something that I'm going to lose out on. But I know of friends in our circles, friends in, you know, my magic circles out here, that are very much into blinging things out as much as possible, and kind of having the chase for some of that stuff. So I understand going after graded stuff. I understand the draw to some of it. The downside is, like, generally once something is graded, for a magic perspective, you can no longer play with it. When you're getting a comic book graded, it's generally sealed and then you're no longer able to read it. And so for me, a lot of the grading ends up being a case where it's counterintuitive to being able to actually have the thing or use the thing for the purpose that you have it for, as well as an additional step that does nothing for the nostalgia factor. But in certain instances, I could definitely see wanting to have a couple of things graded as long as it was a good quality something. And then you obviously it's graded and then preserved and you have it much more around there. But then even so, like I've had some friends even recently like get, you know, relatively early editions of comic books of, you know, something like Sandman or something that are in very good quality, get that graded at like a 9.5 and then have the graded comic framed and hung on the wall or something like that. So there are instances of that where I can see it being doable, but it's not something that like I is driving any of my stuff because I don't go from a sheer kind of collectability standpoint to eventually flip it that, to me, is what grading generally ends up leading to.
Yeah, like, I think it's just, there's something about it where there's a very tactile thing. So, you know, you and I feel differently about Magic because you have more nostalgia for Magic than I do. I didn't grow up playing Magic. Mm-hmm. I kind of just ended up here. I was just a lonely girl in the wrong part of town.
Made a wrong
on
turn.
The wrong, yeah, made a wrong turn, and before you know it. So, and when it comes to, I can't stand getting, seeing anything, any Magic stuff graded because it's, for me, it's just a playable perspective. And it's like, okay, well, that card's useless now. Yep. Like, who's gonna want that? No one's gonna want that because they can't use it. You know, getting power graded, I'm like, that's stupid because you spent $80 to have someone tell you that the card wasn't, you spent money to have someone tell you that the thing that you have that you know is in good shape is in good shape.
It's still worth money.
And on top of it, you pay them to go, hey, make sure I can never touch this with my bare hands again. There's something like for me with those items that I collect, there's something tactile, right? Like I have sealed games or whatever, you know, I'm not going to go take my copy of the Bible game on the PS2 to go get that graded, you know, but because there's a tactile thing. I'm also the kind of person who will buy a new game and open it, you know, like I'll buy, there've been times where like my copy, I got rid of my loose copy of Drill Dozer because I found I bought a sealed version for $3. Right? That's like a $20-$30 game. The sealed game is like $60. Like, I'm just gonna fucking open it. If I want to play Drill Dozer, I'm gonna fucking open it.
Exactly.
You know, and it's just one of these things. Now, in the guy's defense, the game that he wanted to have graded was one of those things where it's very accessible or whatever. But you see folks taking this mentality of, if I get this graded, it's gonna be worth a lot more. Says who? Like, Magic cards aren't comic books. Video games aren't comic books. There's not a high demand for graded Magic cards.
Yep.
There's even a less demand for an item that you actively have to use to play. You spent $80 to have your box sealed copy of Super Mario World graded, you know, that got you, okay, so you get the $80, they put it in a case so you can never use it again. It's not even a nice case. And let's see. You've got that, and then you've got the cost of the game, so maybe $60. So it's worth $140, and you're going to try and sell it for $600-$700. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no demand for that because the prices are so outrageous. There's no the thing when you go to a collection or you want something that you had growing up is that I'm telling you, it's that tactile, reminiscent. If I hand you an expensive card that you played with as a kid in a graded sleeve or whatever, and it's been slackered and slagged, and I hand it to you, you don't care, right? Because if there's that barrier, it's informal, and you lose the intimacy of the nostalgia because the physical connection is not there.
Yep.
Like, I saw someone, I was at that baseball card show, and I saw someone trying to sell a graded LED for $1,000, right? Like, who is that for?
That makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a grading is not a force multiplier. Like, the fact that you have a $100 card and you spend $100 to have somebody tell you, yep, it's what you're looking at and it's in good shape, like, doesn't automatically triple the price. Like, the fact that you put $80 into something doesn't mean that it's now three times as much as what it was. And so, to me, it ends up being the Wayne Knight meme from, like, the original Jurassic Park, where it's like, see, nobody cares. Like,
yeah,
it's just like, okay, well, like, now you have a thick chunk of plastic with a nice shiny gold sticker on it around your thing you can no longer mm-hmm. use. Like,
yep.
That's fine. But it's like, all you did was pay $80 for plastic and to have somebody tell you what you already knew. And also basically had, like, in most of the San Diego and C2E2 and some of the other shows that I've been to, like, they're pretty long lines to get stuff graded for comic books. But it just ends up being a case where, like, again, all you're doing is you're waiting in line to pay somebody money to tell you something you already have. And to me, I just don't see the value of it. Now, I've been in the instances of where one of my friends had his friend. He has a friend from where he grew up that owns a card shop, and they get a lot of power coming in through and a lot of high end cards and, like, alpha beta stuff or whatever. And he gave him a graded beta of some sort, I think. No, it was white border, so it had to be at least unlimited or revised. I forget exactly what it was, but it looked cool. I mean, it was nice. It was like a 9.5. So I'm sure, you know, being a 9.5 graded something with unlimited or revised, it was a decent card. It wasn't a duel or anything like that, but I forget exactly what it was. But I mean, that's cool. And it's just kind of like, oh, like, that would be fine or, like, interesting to put on a shelf. But at the same time, it's like, okay, to me, that's a paperweight. Like, I mean, it means a lot to him because he's a collector that collects more on the rarity aspect or the rarity axis as opposed to the nostalgia axis, which is what I'm on. But at the end of the day, it just comes down to, like, okay, that's a card I can no longer use. So what am I going to do with it? Which to me kind of goes along the lines of one of the other things that went live today was the Guild of Ravnica Mythic Edition boxes. I don't know if you dug into that at all, but I had some other friends trying to go after that stuff, and that was something just from day one that I had no interest in. Like, the stuff looked cool when they announced it, but as soon as they announced the model for acquiring that stuff, I just had no interest in going after, because I'm not a fan of artificial or manufactured scarcity. And so to me, that's kind of like what a lot of the grading stuff does, at least from the functional perspective. A little bit different from comic books because the stories can still exist, but if you grade a video game or you grade a card, again, it's no longer usable. When you're grading it and you're kind of artificially making something more scarce because now you're taking the functionality out of the pre or the pre-existing set or pre-existing pool of known sources of that item. It's something where you're artificially limiting something that would theoretically not need to be done that in the first place. So the fact that, you know, like Wizards is artificially creating these scarce products and, you know, selling them as a high-end collectible when A, they're no different than any other card that's out there. B, they're no functionally different than any other card that's out there. And C, if it's anything like any of the card quality that's been recently, it's going to be shit anyway. And they're going to basically be bending, and half the ones that they open are going to have, white edges anyway. So I'm just not a fan of the artificial scarcity of stuff. And like, I say that as someone who has camped out multiple times in many years to get the San Diego Planeswalkers at San Diego Comic-Con from Hasbro and Wizards. But to me, that's part of the experience. That's part of the nostalgia. Yep. Because I am in San Diego. I'm able to go after that collectible, as opposed to now the only way I can get it is just trying to hammer the site and then eventually getting lucky. Like I've had a lot of experiences camping out overnight to get that stuff there. For me, that's what it is. And that's more the nostalgia factor there. But when it's, to me, when it's kind of like plain and simple, like all it is you're generating a scarce product you're artificially generating a scarce product for just sheer return on your own investment, then I have no interest in doing that. I'll be like, okay, somebody else can waste their time doing that, or somebody else can dig that. So, that's kind of my all around, two cents there.
I think that's a really good way to put it too, is that it ends up just being, there's something disingenuous, it feels like, when it comes to the grading or the stuff of the artificial artificial scarcity, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And it's something that we saw a lot in the 90s. Hashtag Beanie Babies, hashtag comic books.
Yep. Hashtag Death of Superman.
Yes. So, you know, it there's something disingenuous about it then with that, because it takes the heart and soul. I camped out for my Switch, right? But I waited in line for it and got my Switch and was like super excited, and that made it special. Like, okay, now they're available or whatever, but like, you know, I wanted it because it was something to me. It was the first out of all of the systems that I've bought in my life. It is the very first Nintendo system I bought brand new. Right? Like, so it's like, and I wanted it. I was excited for it. Like, I loved, oh no, okay, that's a lie. I bought a Wii U. It's so bad. I feel bad for my Wii U because it's just so neglected. Mm-hmm. But it's like, you know, I wanted it because I knew there was like games on it I wanted to play. There was a connection there. It you know, loosely reminded me of being a kid again. And, you know, when you grade stuff, all that's gotten out of there. I can almost understand, you know, getting comic books graded, because of the materials that comic books are made out of, right? Like, it's, you know, they don't have, yes, they have the, what are they, Mylar? Not Mylar, but they have the bags and boards now. If you leave it, you know, if you seal it and you could leave it and it could preserve it pretty well. But, you know, if you're talking about stuff that's, you know, almost 100 years old now, mm-hmm. you know, yeah, I mean, if you're talking about getting video games graded, sealed video games graded, you know, for a game 80, 90 years down the road, or a Magic card, you know, 80, 90 years down the road, almost 100 years in its life, that's expected to help preserve it. Like, you know, and even then, it does. I don't even necessarily get that. I don't get mad at necessarily that idea, but it's, you know, it... artificial, everybody's out to make a buck, right?
Yep.
I mean, realistically, I remember going over to a buddy's house. Oh my God, I don't know why I've been thinking about this so much lately, but He was, you know, I was in, you know, my sophomore year of college or whatever, and I'm home visiting a buddy for the summer, and he's like cleaning out his room or cleaning out the attic, and what does he break out but a huge box full of Beanie Babies. And in the box is a book saying what the Beanie Babies are going to be worth in 2008. And those numbers, every Beanie Baby, $1,000 minimum.
Yeah.
Every Beanie Baby, $1,000 minimum. And of course, we did what any two young dudes would do, was sitting on this information. And this box full of Beanie Babies, we started to just chuck them at each other. Well, yeah, I mean, honestly, at that point I go, this is the closest thing, you know, after I had a good laugh for 20 minutes, because, you know, the people that have met me personally know that I'm just kind of one of those, if I had money, I would be like an eccentric, that would just be like really amused by silly things. Because I guarantee half of that 20 minutes I was laughing nonstop while looking through that book was imagining the Beanie Baby like bubble crash and like just stock portfolios of just Beanie Babies. I have 14 Princess Di Beanie Babies. Oh, this elephant named Rodney, he's worthless. He's worthless. My life is ruined.
And if you go buy a empty shell of a teddy bear from Build-A-Bear, you can stuff all of them inside it and have a bigger one. So yeah. Congratulations.
Yeah, so it's also the closest thing I've gotten to having a money fight in my life, because well, the books of these were worth thousands of dollars and we're just gonna chuck them at each other. But yeah, it was fun, like, you know, but I just remember that. I remember, you know, all of that nonsense. Where collecting stuff's a fad. I mean, if you get a magic card graded, realistically, think about your audience. Who's your audience in 10 years?
Yep.
It's the same thing. I listened to the Completely Unnecessary podcast with Pat the NES Punk and Ian Ferguson. And he talks about all the time when it comes to collecting in general that, you know, who's going to be paying these prices in 20 years from now, 30 years from now? Who's your market, right? Like, okay, guys like us like playing Nintendo, old Nintendo games, because it's loosely around either what we grew up with or loosely around what we grew up with. Like, I have an unhealthy fondness for the Atari that people my age don't have, But how many people my age can say that they grew up playing an Atari?
Mm-hmm.
There's me and some guy named Ted in Omaha. Like, and that's it. But, you know, but it's that kind of thing. But it's like, without the continuing market, there's no reason for these prices to be this, because the demand's not a permanent demand. So I don't get graded. I don't get grading. I don't understand it. Because the longevity of this, the collecting stuff isn't there. Right. Like, and, you know, comic books is probably different because people get, you know, exposed to it. But with old magic cards, I mean, realistically, anything that hasn't been printed in the last 10 years isn't going to get played generally. Right. Like, you know, I mean, I don't know about you, but I don't know anybody fucking breaking out packs of, you know, breaking out fucking Odyssey uncommons.
Yep.
You know, for a deck. And actually it's funny I say that, 'cause I just did buy a snuff out the other day. I put together a Legacy Death Shadow. But yeah, I mean, but generally, like, this, there's not a lot of demand for the older stuff. So the markets aren't there. It's just there. I don't know. I'm not a fan of it. And if you do it, I think you're silly. Boom. I said it.
Please listen carefully.